Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's another Sunday edition of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Justin Cuthbert, Julian McKenzie of Zone Time fame. That's right, Zone Time. If you haven't caught episode one of the new hockey property here at Yahoo Sports, Zone Time, please do. It's hosted by Julian and therefore much more stronger off the top than these podcasts tend to be. Tell you what, Julian, in a world where it's impossible to come up with names for things because every hockey pun under the sun has already been leveraged, it seems, to name something, whether it's an article or a video series or whatever, or podcast. I think you guys nailed this one. Zone Time, I like it.
I'm glad we did. To go behind the curtain a little bit, I think one name that we were thinking of using was the Wraparound. And I don't know if you've seen the new Mighty Ducks TV series. In the debut episode, in one of the first lines of dialogue, like they have the like Mighty Ducks team like practicing, and there are these two kids who are sitting in the stands who are doing a podcast, and they call it the Wraparound. So imagine we were this close to sharing the name of a podcast found in a Mighty Ducks rebooted TV series.
I mean, I think that sort of just proves the point. Like, there it is. It is scraping the bottom of the barrel of these things. That's why we have the very generic Yahoo Sports Hockey podcast on this show here.
It works.
It's very original. But Zone Time's good. More important than the name, the show and the content is very good as well. And Julian, you just spent the last week absorbing hockey knowledge from the sports writing machine that is The Athletic. So before we get into hockey topics, I need to know how bad your brain hurts right now.
Yo, like, this is my first weekend off in like at least over a year. I am enjoying that to the fullest because the knowledge is one thing, the editing is a whole other thing. But all the while, I have all these different story ideas that are just starting to pop up in my head. And I just need to kind of like lay back and just be like, have them all stop like talking to me, like, you know, one by one. Just let everyone cool it for the weekend. Let's wait till Monday morning before I get back to the office. Well, I guess my home office in this case, and get back to work. But other than that, man, a lot of cool people getting to know them at The Athletic. Really thankful for the weekend. Really thankful to everyone who's been sending me well wishes. It's really kind for everyone to do that. And I'm really looking forward to this, to working more with The Athletic and doing more Zone Time and continuing to be on the Yahoo Sports Hockey podcast with you, good sir. I'm really thankful for the opportunities, man.
I love how generic it is. It's perfect. It is perfect for this podcast. So a good first week for you and weekends off. That sounds tremendous, even though we're bugging you on a Sunday.
You're not bugging me at all.
I know you say that, but it's work is work. And I guess you only have Saturdays. Oh,
dude, it's not work. We get to talk about like hockey every week, and almost every episode we talk about how great each other is. Like, it's not work at all. This is like the best.
It's our weekly tire pumping, and it's fantastic for both of our egos. Okay, let's get into topic one, because we'll save all that for the end of the show, as it's normally scheduled for. And I don't know if you edited a story that involved Tim Peel this week, but I think you probably would have because of how prevalent this theme was throughout the week. The fact that Tim Peel was caught on a hot mic, basically admitting that he was looking to call the Nashville Predators, call a penalty on the Nashville Predators, whether it was to even up things, you know, serve an injustice that happened earlier in the game. So for some reason, he felt compelled to basically execute an even up call or a makeup call or something along those lines. And that's something as hockey fans, we sort of understood for a very long time that makeup calls and even up calls happen throughout this game. Because if you just look at, you know, the amount of penalties that you see in most games, it's, you know, the differential is usually one or zero or maybe two if things got really crazy on one side. Like we sort of understand that referees are trying to do this. And that's why it's such a polarizing topic, because Tim Peel got fired or dropped or basically told that he wasn't going to have his last few weeks on the job anymore because of he was basically just carrying out a mandate. He verbalized what the mandate is for most NHL referees, or at least we assume the mandate is because of how the game has been traditionally called. So I'll pose it to you simple. Was it fair or unfair that the NHL dropped Tim Peel for admitting that he executed a makeup call?
I think it's fair, but I also think debating whether or not it is fair for Tim Peel is a bit besides the point. I think if the NHL is going to do this to Tim Peel, shouldn't the next step be for them that they need to figure out, they need to do some kind of restructuring with the referees in terms of the notion that they should be going about having these makeup calls and managing the game? Like, shouldn't it just be a situation where the rules are the rules and we follow them to the letter? I understand that they are there, and in theory that should be the case, but as you mentioned, it all hockey fans know that referees do this to a certain extent. So if we're going to discipline Tim Peel for what he did, the next step should be the league and the referees coming together and saying, hey, you know what? We need to change how the game is refereed. But what I've also noticed from a lot of people in hockey circles, and I'm kind of starting to agree with them too, like, this might just be like an ideal theoretical thing that just might not happen. It's totally possible we're in a situation where the NHL says, hey, Tim Peel did what he did. Fine. He was supposed to retire next month or whatever. But, like, you know, we dealt with the problem. Let's go away from this. This is done. And I think a lot of fans are kind of resigned to that, because, like, what else is there? Like, what else are they going to do? Like, there's nothing that they could really do, really. You're not going to go off to some other league and, like, watch them be like, oh, well, I'm tired of how games are refereed or whatever. I remember feeling this way when the NFL had the replacement refs for the few weeks, right, because of the labor strife going on with them. We all still watched anyway. When it comes to these leagues that are in these high positions, like, little stuff like that, that's not going to bother the NHL that much. So, I mean, I don't – in an ideal world, the league steps up and says, you know what, we need to change how the sport is refereed. We can't be in a situation where – games are managed a certain way and refereed in a certain way, and makeup calls are made here and there, and some things are looked at and some things aren't looked at. Like, call the game to the letter, whether it's regular season, whether it's playoffs, whatever. If it's the rule, it's the rule. But I could also envision a situation where that doesn't happen. And I will preface that by saying, I also didn't think the NHL was going to do something to Tim Peel either. And they eventually did. They did it pretty quickly. So I guess that's one glimmer of optimism, but I could also see them just saying, you know what, we did enough in the Tim Peel situation.
Yeah, I'm a little reluctant to give the NHL too much credit here, because I don't think, you know, I don't think if Tim Peel, you know, was caught on a mic that wasn't accessed to the public, but the NHL saw it, would they have reacted this way? I doubt it, because this is all a PR spin, I think. And frankly, I think it's pretty harsh. Like, the more I've thought about this, right when it happened, I'm like, wow, that can't happen. Like, there's no way that they can let this guy continue to referee. But now that I'm thinking about it more and more, and I think, you know, the immediate reaction is, like, fire him. Like, he doesn't deserve to be. Like, that's the Twitter reaction, right? But when you actually think about someone's life, and I don't want to get too, like, you know, philosophical or soft or whatever about this particular subject, but, like, let's say you're working in the office. You carry out your boss's mandate to a T. And you accidentally send out a stray email, which basically tells someone how the sausage is really made. And that was a mistake. But you made a mistake that you didn't mean to do. And all you've done for the last 40 years, and I don't know how Tim Peel's been doing it. And I know Tim Peel's not, you know, the model citizen in terms of NHL employee. But that one mistake, because you're carrying out the mandate that the NHL has put for you, or you at your office, the mandate that has been set out for you, and you basically get, you don't get your pension taken away, but you get your last 2 weeks taken away from you, or your last month taken away from you, and you get basically shamed in front of everyone for that reason. I feel like that's, in real world, I just don't think it's that fair, but I see why it had to happen, and I'm glad Elliot Friedman went to this point, because the first thing I thought about when they dropped him was, okay, this is the new gambling world. This is the NHL venturing into gambling, and everything has to be on the straight and narrow. Just the same day, before, like 6 hours before Tim Peel said that thing, or said the thing he said on a hot mic, the NHL was sitting in on a legislative meeting at the Government of Canada talking about the legalization of single bet or single event sports betting. And they were getting grilled by members of parliament about the fact that they have to protect the integrity of the sport. Now, I don't think these two things are like immediately connected, like, oh, we just appeared on this, now we have to react in this certain way. But they have to protect their brand. And when someone is basically admitting that games are being manipulated in a certain extent, that's the only way you can react to these things, I think. And I think the bigger conversation now has to be, okay, does gambling now change the way the NHL operates, the way referees officiate games? Because if you truly want things to be equitable for bettors, gamblers, the entire industry that's going to be involved in this, then you might have to change the way referees conduct themselves. And that might mean that we see 5 penalties to 1, big differentials when it in terms of how the game is called. And the referees that are the penalties that are called, because that's actually how the game should go in terms of flow. So I wonder if this is the first step towards the game changing in a bigger way, just because of the new realities that gambling does present.
I think you bring up a really strong argument there, and if that's what it takes for refereeing to be on the same page and for them to kind of understand, you know what, like you can't be a game manager and players can stop being frustrated over the refereeing and the nature of it, then damn it, like, do it at this point. Because I think it's ridiculous that we look at all the, we could point to so many other games from this season, from season on, from whatever, where we look at a referee's call and we're like, what is this going on here? Why is this makeup call being done? And I brought this up on Twitter as well. I still find it ridiculous that leagues like Major League Soccer, which are not necessarily considered in the big four of sports, and I think the NBA does this as well, there are other leagues out there where if a controversial call is made, a pool reporter from among the media can provide a list of questions and at least question referees on what they did. There is that option allotted to them, and it is not there for the National Hockey League. There are so many things with regards to either players with referees or even media with referees, or just referees in general with this league, that need to be fixed. And if, I mean, we all know how important the almighty dollar is. If it gets to a point where, you know, gambling and the potential of that, that's what has to force the NHL into making changes, or at least talking to the referees union and saying, hey, you guys need to shape it up here and talk to whoever's in charge of director officiating and just kind of do a clean sweep here and restructure everything, so be it at this point. Because I think players and fans and so many other people are just tired of the game being mismanaged by referees. And I understand it's a tough job for them, and I understand they might be going through a mandate that's handed down to them by their boss. But at the end of the day, it's your job. And at the end of the day, if a referee essentially costs games because of their managing, that's going to create a whole other world of problems. It's something that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I mean, in the event that the NHL does take on this new transparent reality, I mean, I think it opens up the opportunity or the situation where they're like tacitly admitting all this guilt from the past, right? That they've always done this for years and decades have been, you know, manipulating the game so that it is quote unquote fair. And I think if this is going to happen, I feel like it has to be gradual for the NHL to actually successfully do this. But I think we're going to be able to pick up on it. Like, fans are smart. They're going to be able to pick up on any changes that are happening. And it will be interesting to see how the NHL navigates this. I will say, though, I don't think it's a league made problem. I actually think it's a player, coach, and executive made problem, because for years and years and years, they've been saying in the media all the time, the referees shouldn't be deciding the game. They say it over and over and over again. You hear it every playoffs. You hear it when there's anything controversial going on. This is something that players, coaches, and executives have drilled into the heads of the league and the referees for years and generations, time and time and time again. And they're just, I believe, reacting to that. They have allowed basically the players and the coaches to shape the way the game is called over time after all these years. And that is how we got to this point. So it'll be interesting to see if something else, another force, can disrupt that, that force being gambling.
Yeah. I look, at the end of the day, I'll reiterate again. Restructural change. Restructural is not even really a word, actually. Structural change. Whatever. Just do something, referees. Something just has to be done.
What shouldn't be done is covering your mic on TV like Eric Furlatt did in the Leafs and...
Oh, that's a ridiculous thing.
I think it was Senators. God. That was just ridiculous. Like, you think you're smart. You think you're smart doing that, but you're on camera, and it you're basically... You could be saying nothing wrong, but you're presenting it as if you're saying something
you
that you shouldn't
guilty.
Be saying, which is awful. But that's another conversation for another time. Okay, first big trade, really, in the lead-up to the deadline, which is about 2 weeks away, maybe 2 weeks and change. Eric Staal to the Montreal Canadiens. The Montreal Canadiens in your home city of Montreal. So I got to ask you, why? Why did the Montreal Canadiens, who just said that they didn't want to acquire anyone or do anything, Marc Bergevin continues to lie to us. So why does he continue to lie to us? Why did they make this trade? And where does Eric Staal play when now? But also in the best case scenario, if and when the Montreal Canadiens are fully healthy into the postseason, how does Eric Staal fit and why did this all come together?
Justin, I've been telling people from every which way why the Montreal Canadiens had to make a move before the deadline. I've said it on the podcast. I've said it on different outlets. This team needs to make the playoffs. They started off hot and they ended up in a situation where they weren't winning as many games in February. They were in a situation where they had to do something. And Marc Bergevin has shown us before that he may say one thing to the media, but he will be working in the background trying to make something happen. And specifically with the center position, they entered the year with, you know, three young centers in Phil Deneau. I mean, Phil Deneau's relatively young too. So they had a relatively young center depth going into this season, and they realized it wasn't working as well as it should have. So now you bring in Eric Staal, who a proven playoff veteran, Stanley Cup champion, a Triple Gold Club member as well. So you have a team now that has him, Shea Weber, and Corey Perry. I know Shea Weber's not a Triple Gold Club member, but you're talking about established NHL players who would have been really good to have on a team in 2011. But in 2021, you're like, you know what? This is okay. All this to say, you can't necessarily fault the veteran experience and star power that you have by having all three of those guys. And I think Eric Staal, in terms of where he might fit, evidently like a third or fourth line player. I think even if he's not the fastest guy, he does make the bottom six a little slower. I think his veteran savvy, what he's able to provide in the faceoff dot, he's been able to get some power play time as well. And he's not that far off from that guy who tore it up in Minnesota and scored all those goals. Like, I think this is a good acquisition for the Canadiens, mostly because they gave up like two draft picks, a third and a fifth, two rounds that the Canadiens, I think, have two other picks in each of those rounds. And they managed to get the Sabres to retain half of his salary. So you're getting Eric Staal at under $2 million for essentially free. And he's going to play either third or fourth line minutes alongside of Corey Perry or Yoel Armia or other bottom six players. Like, I don't know. I don't hate this move. I think it depends on the player, obviously. I know some people look at his stats in Buffalo and be like, oh, they're not that great. But newsflash for everyone, no one's been that great in Buffalo. Like, they've been losing for the better part of like a month, you know? So I think the Canadiens did okay with this move, and they didn't have to give up that much for it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they gave up much. They've obviously accrued a lot of draft picks, and there's only so many draft picks that you can actually use in the end. Like, there's only so many contracts you can sign. Yeah, you want a lottery tickets, and this is going to be quite a lottery situation when the draft does get underway this July, I believe. But at some point you got to use them, and they've set themselves up to try and make a run. And that's when you normally spend draft picks, when you're preparing to go on a run. You're right. He's not going to break into the top six. You don't think, I mean, Philip Deneau and Nick Suzuki have those center positions, and then they've got their pretty well defined top four, you know, top six wingers. So what happens then when Jesperi Kotkaniemi comes back? Does he slide back into that center hole on the third line, or does Eric Staal move over to the left wing? Because we know he does have some versatility. Or do we see Eric Staal in the fourth line center position and just try to provide some plus value there?
I think the fact that he can play wing does give the Mantrokanians that option to kind of put him on the side of Kotkaniemi if need be. I for most of this year, we've seen Kotkaniemi play either like a second line role or a third line role. We've seen over the last few weeks just some of those lines just being a bit jumbled. I would be stunned if, I think if anything, Staal would probably make that change over to wing. I don't see the Canadians playing around with Jesperi Kotkaniemi between center and wing anymore. I think he's established that he, one, is a center. Two, it's better off for him in the long run for him to stay there. So whether it's on the second liner or third liner, he'll stay there. And if anything, you know, having Eric Staal on the fourth line at his cost for the Montreal Canadiens and at the point in his career, I don't think it's a bad thing for him to be there, even if it means Jake Evans is going to have to sit out and be on the taxi squad or just be a healthy scratch. I think he is a bit of an upgrade on him. So I think as long as he's in that bottom six, unless Eric Staal all of a sudden drinks from the fountain of youth and plays like a 23-year-old, I think that's going to be a good role for him. Kind of similar to what we were seeing with Corey Perry with this team, a player long past his prime who is not expected to provide the talents that he provided in the prime of in the heyday of his career, just kind of play him in a veteran role out back just to kind of mentor some of the younger players, but also just chip in offensively whenever need be. I would imagine that's where Eric Staal is going to end up, and just I think it's an ideal situation for him.
We need in the playoffs, we need Staal and Perry versus Thornton and Simmons and Spezza just on a head-to-head matchup throughout the whole series, just as like an intriguing subplot. Yeah, you're right. I think you said earlier that it's sort of hard to analyze this deal hard to analyze exactly what Staal is going to bring. You mentioned him being a very productive player with the Minnesota Wild, but not a very effective player with the Buffalo Sabres. But, you know, who can be an effective player with the Buffalo Sabres? He's got the experience, got the pedigree, got the versatility. The only red flag I see is that I heard that his kids were still in Minnesota even when he was in Buffalo going to school, wow. I guess. And I'm not sure if that's changed, but I imagine going across the border would make that even more difficult if there is separation there. So how bad as a father do you want to extend that separation? Like, how driven are you going to be like, okay, let's go another 2 months this season and be away from my kids for another 2 months? Like, and that's like, the kids can't even get over the border now, probably, because of the obvious issues going on with COVID-19. So that's one thing that kind of sketched me out about anyone buying Eric Staal. But again, I think you got to take that shot. And certainly the 7-day quarantine now helps matters. Do you think that deal would have been made if it was still a 14-day quarantine period?
I think it would have been done earlier, but I absolutely agree that a 7-day quarantine helps matters. As I understand, he got into Montreal yesterday, so the quarantine, I guess, should have started then. So by next weekend, he should be made available. And even then, once he gets to practicing, he'll probably need a bit more time before he's available back in the lineup. But considering how the deadline is now, this particular period of time is the ideal time for Canadian teams to kind of get into it. And I think Marc Bergevin realizing that, you know what, there's a way for this deal to be done where it doesn't totally brutalize my salary cap while also getting a player who doesn't have to quarantine as long as it was previously earlier this week before the rules changed, that definitely had to have enticed him a little bit. 7 days versus 14 days, especially in a season like what they've had now where they lost a week due to COVID. All these other teams, I mean, considering the fact that they had COVID kind of wreck through their team, the fact that the Calgary Flames, the Vancouver Canucks did not make up ground on them, pretty good for the Montreal Canadiens. I will add that there. But I think it was a pretty, not necessarily perfect, but I think a pretty ideal situation for Marc Bergevin to kind of make this trade, considering everything that was going on.
No quarantine was required, at least no lengthy quarantine was required for Daryl Sutter, but Johnny Gaudreau might wish that he had a couple more days away from the new Calgary Flames head coach. We are on the heels of one of the most hilarious biting remarks in NHL history, honestly. I mean, Daryl Sutter took an absolute softball question, asked, basically, anything. Say anything you want that's nice about Johnny Gaudreau, who's about to play in his 500th game, because we have this very basic pregame report where we just want to tell fans that this good thing is happening with one of our star players. Maybe it was a team employee that asked it. I'm not actually sure who asked the question, but it was just an opportunity for Daryl Sutter to say something nice about the most important player, or the most important forward, at least, with the Calgary Flames. And he absolutely took the opportunity to hammer Gaudreau and his performance from one night earlier. After having the opportunity to sleep on it, he was still just absolutely stewing over the performance of Johnny Gaudreau. It was an incredible remark. He basically said that when asked about the 500th game, he just said, "I hope he has more energy than he had in his 499th game." And I guess we got a response from Gaudreau, both from a performance standpoint and with what he said on the mic. He got an assist, a primary assist on the power play, but didn't really do too much in the Calgary Flames 4-2 victory over the Winnipeg Jets on Saturday night. But he did come out afterwards and say that he heard it and it doesn't really bother him. He knows when he plays bad. He knows when he plays good. He's known that for almost 25 years, which made me realize how old Johnny Gaudreau is. Surprisingly, he's almost 28, which I didn't think was the case.
He's
He's really young. Well, no. I mean, he's young, but he's... I thought he was like 25, but he's 27, That's turning fair. 28. Anyway, he's been playing hockey for over 20 years. He knows when he plays good. He knows when he plays bad, and he's not going to take it too offensively or take it to heart what his coach said about him. But I don't know. This kind of makes me feel like the Daryl Sutter versus Johnny Gaudreau rivalry could take on multiple parts. What say you?
It's such an unnecessary thing for Daryl Sutter to say, because it's essentially going to create what we're going to lead into now, which is people are going to wonder, how is Daryl Sutter meshing with all of those players in Calgary? And I'll get into that more in a second. I'll just say this about Daryl. Thank you for bringing back the word dopey into our lives, because I think that was the actual word he used after Gaudreau's 499th game. And then he kind of mentioned them, because he didn't mention any players the first time he had to talk about this. He just said
That's
there were a couple dopey players who just kind of cost them the game. And he could have left it there, and we would have all been like, all right, it's very clear the Calgary Flames didn't play up to snuff. And then he just kind of eviscerates Johnny Gaudreau.
And he could have been a little bit nicer and said, I hope he's just not as dopey. Like, that would at least be kind of funny, and you could connect the dots. But instead he went in on Gaudreau.
Like, come on, man. Like, that's, I don't know about that. Like, I was talking with someone who covers the team pretty closely out in Calgary, and when Daryl Sutter came in relieving Jeff Ward of his duties, it seemed as if for that Calgary Flames team, there were a lot of guys on that squad who probably really would have appreciated the disciplinarian tactics of a coach who knows better, obviously, in that regard. And I imagine Daryl Sutter is able to fit that bill. Like, the first practice he had was like a bag skate. But... Mm-hmm. I am very curious about guys like a Johnny Gaudreau, who you kind of rub the wrong way in the media like that, or even other younger guys, like a Sean Monahan, or wonder how Sam Bennett is feeling about. Like, I know a lot of people like to think of like the older school guys versus the newer school players and how they mesh. When you see a guy like Daryl Sutter, kind of, you know, we know him from the runs that he's had in years past, to mesh with some of the newer players now, like, I have to wonder, like, what's it like for those guys? Like, fine, you need discipline to a certain point, but like, with the team that you have now and where they are in the standings, like, is that, how many of the
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Those players really feel that's a fit. And I think because of what Daryl Sutter did, even if like some people might kind of interpreted as him just trying to get a rise out of the player for him to just be like, you know what, let's just get him going. And maybe Johnny Gaudreau publicly to us really isn't bothered that much by it.
Mm-hmm.
But I am curious like how other players on the Calgary Flames really kind of vibe with Daryl Sutter. And I think that's just going to be a question that's just going to kind of pop up every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, I think the easy way to take this story is to ask if Sutter is the right man for the job in Calgary, both in the, you know, in this immediate term in which he was brought in to sort of fix things and it hasn't gone very well, and in the long term, because Johnny Gaudreau, we've already been talking about his future quietly for it seems like a pretty long time. But so you have to weigh his actual abilities with this roster and with this group. Does his skill set, his being Daryl Sutter's skill set, match what the Calgary Flames have? And no, these aren't the Los Angeles Kings of 2012. Like, this is a different team. So is his influence going to work with this team? But also, is it already going to fall on deaf ears? Because he's coming in hot, obviously. And that's, I think, the only way he knows how to come in is hot. But he's, you know, the bag skating, the criticisms of the star players, the changes to the structure, like, hey, we're not even going to play high event fun hockey anymore. Like, that's over. Get used to having one scoring chance per game, and I hope you put it in the back of the net, because that's the only way you're going to leave the rink happy tonight. Like, it's a different world, and are these guys going to get used to it? It's easy to accept that different world if you're winning, but the Calgary Flames don't seem like they're equipped to win right now. So if you have this start with Sutter, usually, you know, his influence is usually immediate and positive, and it's not right now. How quickly are they going to sour on this, and how quickly is Johnny Gaudreau, who doesn't seem like his roots are firmly planted in Calgary, how long until that starts to separate a little bit more, just because he's not playing the way he wants to play? He's not maybe treated the way he wants to be treated, and so on and so forth. Like, I think you have to ask about Sutter again already after Treleving may have just used his final bullet. Like, this is sixth coach, I think, under his tenure. Like, nothing seems right there. It just, it's a foreboding feeling, everything that's going on with the Flames. And I don't think, as innocent and as funny and as like not a big deal this really is, I just think it foreshadows, and it's that foreshadowing feeling just has me a little bit uneasy.
And if the Flames continue to lose games and fall further out of that playoff race, then you're really going to see more warts. Winning cures everything. And I mean, I'm sure if you go back to some of those LA Kings days and you talk to some of those guys there, they might have some stories on Daryl Sutter, on how he is as a person, and how he might not necessarily be the most ideal person to deal with. You should probably check out Daniel Carcillo's Twitter. But those LA Kings could always say they won games. They won Stanley Cups under Daryl Sutter. And winning at the end of the day, even if you're going into war with guys you might not like or guys who just might annoy you, at the end of the day, it kind of smooths over a few things. As opposed to a team like the Calgary Flames, which, fine, they still have a chance at making the playoffs if the Montreal Canadiens kind of fall back. But this was a big week for them, and they didn't really gain that much ground. Yeah. So I think if the Flames continue to kind of pitter-patter around and ultimately miss the playoffs, by the way, this is a Flames team that a lot of people, and I'll even add myself to this, a lot of people thought they were going to be a playoff team this year. Oh, they had the expectations with Jeff Ford and what he was able to do with them last year. And they have capable players. They should be a playoff team, especially in this division where, you know, Vancouver took a step back, the Ottawa Senators also as well. I'm very surprised at how well the Edmonton Oilers have done, considering that we look at them as a two-man team and everyone else kind of has to follow. And people still have doubts on the Montreal Canadiens. This was a division that the Calgary Flames, I mean, they should be 2-3. Like, a lot of people thought they'd be a 2-3 team, but they might be 5. And depending on how the Canucks play, they might be 6. Like, this is not an ideal situation for the Calgary Flames at all. And if the team continues to kind of just play continues to play uninspired hockey over the next few weeks, I'm maybe not going to guarantee it, but I think we're going to see more warts under Daryl Sutter, and we're going to continue to question him whether he's the man for the job for this team. As you said, like, I think more questions are just going to start to come. And I think that comment about Johnny Gaudreau, that's ultimately going to be an entry point into people kind of dissecting Daryl Sutter and his relationship with this current roster.
And how do the rest of the teammates feel about the comments? This is probably closer to apples and oranges than apples to apples, but I don't think there was a great response. I don't think Mike Babcock got a great response from the rest of the Toronto Maple Leafs when he embarrassed Jason Spezza the way he did at the beginning of what was last season. And this is sort of under the same vein, where it's you're embarrassing the star player when this should be an opportunity to celebrate this star player, even though it didn't go that great the night previous. But that's the day, the day is flipped to the next day. And you have your opportunity to say something nice about a guy who's actually, hitting a legitimate milestone. And how do the rest of the teammates in the organization feel about you taking a shot at him when it didn't have to happen? I don't know. I just, again, it's not the same makeup. I mean, we've seen so many teams turn around with the introduction of a new coach, but few teams have to play a completely different style after they've done that, and a style that maybe isn't compatible with how they're constructed. So, it's just all these things to consider with the future of the Flames with Daryl Sutter. So after the most hilarious biting remark I think I've heard in a long time, we have another superlative, which is the best reaction to an overtime loss of the season, at least. It was Pierre Dorion throwing some liquid. I don't know if it was water, coffee, Gatorade. I'm not sure what it was. I'm glad it wasn't Brian Burke and he didn't have a spit cup in front of him, because that would have been gross. But Pierre Dorion chucking whatever drink he had in front of him after Justin Hall scored in overtime for the Maple Leafs to beat the Senators on Thursday night provided the best gif of the season and one of the funniest nights on Twitter this season, because it was so funny and so hilarious and so perfect that Pierre Dorion, he's got an arm on him, but it was probably a regrettable moment for him.
I would love to... I want to see that gif again, because I think it was hilarious to see live, to see Pierre Dorion get so upset that he just chucks a drink in the box there. And I mean, you know what? I don't fault him for that. I know a few people are like, wow, like that's a bit over the top. But the Ottawa Senators have been able to get a couple shots in at the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's your hated in-province rival. Your team's on a 3-on-1. Thomas Chabot tries to make this pass. And Austin Matthews, of all people, blocks that pass, keeps the puck in the offensive zone, and it leads to a game-winning goal. Like, that's something where if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, you're like, oh, that's so frustrating. So I think it's kind of cool that Pierre Dorion, maybe kind of felt like a fan in that moment and said, damn it, how could we lose that game? Because otherwise, if that play went to form, that might have ended up being an overtime winner for the Ottawa Senators. But for the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, they get the win in the end. I like that reaction from Pierre Dorion because it's entertaining for us. I don't know if you've seen it, but someone added the Pierre Dorion throw to the video of Joe Biden walking up Air Force One. It is incredible editing. It's one of the better edits you'll see in the year of our Lord 2021. And I very much enjoyed that meme. I very much enjoy how long we're... I mean, goodness gracious. Pierre Dorion, pretty much from the beginning to the end of his tenure, he starts off with the whole interview on Sportsnet where he gets asked about his team and he just takes a second. He's like, we're a team. And then, I don't know what his future is going to be at the end of the year, but, if it gets to that point where that's like the last memeable thing, damn, Pierre Dorion has been able to give us some gold, man. But I thought that reaction, pure genuine reaction from him. I'll add this too. I hope that it was not a problem to clean up whatever drink he messed up, because we all know who his owner is. And I just hope there were people in the arena around to clean it up. We all know who his owner is and all that. But I don't have a problem with the reaction. I like the meme. I like how hilarious it is. I can't wait to see how creative hockey Twitter is going to be with it. I don't know. Maybe Omar from Zone Time has already got gifts lined up that he wants to put up with this dude. I thought it was hilarious. It's one of the funniest things you'll see all year.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like was the color of the liquid. I don't know. I just don't know what he was drinking. I don't know what he was sipping on, and that's the only thing that bothers me about it. I like that you gave credit to Dorion, because he could be at the point where he's just patting himself on the back a little bit. Not that Ottawa's playing really well, not that Ottawa's overachieving, not that Ottawa's playing, free roll at the table right now. But Ottawa's doing what they were supposed to do this year, which was make life miserable for other teams that are supposed to beat you. With the exception of the Edmonton Oilers, they played really, really well this year. They've lost every game against Edmonton. They've been very competitive and actually have a winning record, I think, against everyone else. So the fact that he cares this much when Clearly they're not making the playoffs this season, but clearly they're doing what they're supposed to do this year, and he probably has all the backing in the world because what he's done has been positive. Like, we're seeing good things from Tim Stützle. Brady Tkachuk is turning into the captain that they envisioned, and they rolled the dice with Brady Tkachuk in that number four pick overall back then. But all these little other things, like Josh Norris looks like he's going to be a player, steps from Batherson, like even guys like Zub, like there's good things that are happening in Ottawa right now. But those good things don't mean that they have to win every game, because that's not a thing right now. They're not in any race. But for Dorian to care that much still and to get that angry because they didn't get the W, he could be happy with just giving the Toronto Maple Leafs fits, and yet he still wants that victory. And I got to give him at least a little bit of applause for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're pure Dorian, you've had to stick through a team that's been losing and just not been good for the better part of the last little while. Like, after a while, all that losing and joking and all that, like, I get it, where the Ottawa Senators are in a season where, you know, I said at the beginning, earlier this year, they're supposed to just be chill. They're just kind of there. Yes, you're right. They make other teams' lives miserable. They're not going to do anything. But if you go through that after so long, like, that pent-up frustration is going to get to you at some point, right? Like, Pierre Dorion, that reaction of him throwing that drink, I'm guessing it's like a passion tea lemonade or something, or like maybe not an Earl. That's not an Earl Grey color, but like it definitely wasn't coffee. It didn't look like a coffee.
No,
and it's probably it's like
weird colored water. Again, I don't think we're ever gonna find out. I'm just happy, or at least Pierre Dorion should just be happy. I guess I would kind of find it funny, but if he had a hot mic on in that moment, then we really would have had something.
I don't think the league would have suspended him for that either.
No, I don't think you can. I don't think you can do that. That's it for us. I think we've gone through our topics. We've gone through our praise of one another. So I think we can move forward and tackle this next week ahead of us. Until next weekend, Julian.
Yeah.
On the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast.
Yeah.
You'll have. You want a little more zone time? You want to pump up zone time a little more?
I mean,
I guess I controlled that, right?
I mean, zone time pumps that too, but and I guess you could edit it out if I'm actually wrong, but I think this is our producer's last episode, Benji Egbeke, right? Am I wrong? Tell me if I'm wrong, Benji.
I don't know if he's ready to pop in. I think you're right, though. I think you're right, so. And that shouldn't be overlooked. Is he saying something?
Is that his voice?
Confirmed. That is confirmed.
Oh my God, yeah. It's the voice of God. I just wanted to just take the time to just be like, yo, dude, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to work with you over these last few weeks. I just wanted to shout you out, man. Yeah, I know you've been able to do some great content on your own time, and we wish you nothing but the best in whatever's next, dude.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. It's been a blessing to be able to work with you both, and looking forward to keeping in touch for the future.
Yeah, we're losing Ben, but he's going to be off to bigger and better things as always. I mean, we pumped up his feature with Wayne Simmons a couple weeks ago. He's just going to be churning out that good content soon enough. We're going to miss him here, but we're going to move forward with Chelsea, who's going to have to come on at some point now that we've had Ben on. So from Ben to Chelsea, but Ben, we definitely do appreciate everything you've done for this show and everything you've done at Yahoo Sports. It was a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you.
Oh, he's back. Okay. We'll leave it there. Julian, Ben, Chelsea, thanks very much for another week. And listeners, we'll talk to you next week.
Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.